Okay, good morning. My name is Brian Schwartz. I am the Vice President for Research and Sponsored Programs here at the Graduate Center. I'm also a professor of physics, and I'm also more proud of I'm a member of the board of the Asian American Asian Research Institute. So that's my background. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Graduate Center. As you may know, that the Graduate Center is the PhD program of the City University of New York. The City of University of New York has 225,000 students, of which 4,000 are graduate students, and they study in 32 PhD departments. The faculty here at the Graduate Center is about 130. In addition to that, we use faculty, and our faculty who are involved in PhD research and teaching, from our 18 other campuses to result in a total faculty of nearly 1,600 people, one of the larger faculties in America. The Graduate Center recently, in some ratings, came out fourth in the humanities nationally in terms of PhD programs behind Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. We were number four. So it's... In addition to having 32 departments, there are 28 centers at the Graduate Center. So it's a very big institution. We've moved into this building about 7-8 years ago. This building used to be a department store. You're probably sitting in the ladies' perfume department. It was the B. Altman Building, developed in New York City in 1911, a landmark building. Being a physicist, we physicists think about the world. And in fact, it's a very exciting time for physics because we think we're beginning to understand the Big Bang, how the world got created according to physical laws, and maybe on the verge of explaining colliding universes, alternative realities, dark matter, dark energy. In addition, in a year from now, in between France and Switzerland, there's a big super collider about to come online, and we think not only will we understand the world of the very big, but we'll begin understanding the world of the very small. And what's very interesting about understanding these two extremes, in order to understand the creation of the universe, we have to get down to the particles that the universe is created at, and we have to create conditions very similar to the beginning of the universe. Well, I think this conference, which is devoted to Buddhism, peace, and mind, really asks similar questions, but from a different point of view. It's really an understanding of the universe from, as I understand it, a much more personal view and a much more involved view. So I think you're about to have a wonderful conference. I wish you all well. I wish you a very good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, for giving a wonderful introduction. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the CUNY Forum on Buddhism, Peace and Mind, presented by the Asian American Asian Research Institute, or ARI, and sponsored by the Lam Shi Tan Memorial Fund. My name is Dr. Victoria Ying. I'm an assistant professor at New York City College of Technology in the Biology Department. Today, I will be the facilitator for the forum, for the morning session, sessions 1 and 2. Before we begin session 1, I'd like to thank Dr. Brian Schwartz and the CUNY Graduate Center for providing us this facility for today. It's really a nice space for this event. The purpose of today's forum is to introduce lay people, particularly CUNY faculty and students, to the present-day Buddhism study, and to create a dialogue for all of us to understand Buddhism better and to share it among all of us within the university. Before we start with our first guest speaker, I would like to remind all of you that we will have lunch around noontime. Some of you have lunch vouchers. If you don't have a lunch voucher, do not worry. We will provide free lunch boxes. If you would like to buy lunch during lunch period, you may also do that in the cafeteria. We ask that you provide a receipt so that we can reimburse you up to $5. Also note that there will be streaming videos, audio podcasts for today's event, and it will be posted online at aaari.info or www.ariinfo. Now we will have two speakers for a panel discussion. Right? The first speaker is Venerable Ji Xing, and the second speaker is Venerable Lan Kuang. Venerable Ji Xing is the President of the Buddhist Association of the United States. He will talk about Towards a Better Tomorrow, and Venerable Lan Kuang is a CUNY alumnus from Queens College and an abbess at the Buddhist Cultural Center in Boston, and will address the topic of meditation, a way towards peace. So we will begin with our first guest speaker, Venerable Ji Xing. Let us welcome Venerable Ji Xing.
Professor Brian, the facilitator, Dr. Victor Levine, Venerable Kuang, all members of the Sangha community, members, all members of my family. When I say all members of my family, I may need some explanation. Buddha always wants us to treat everyone as your father or mother. That's why in Buddhism we treat everybody as a member of the family. We help them in any way we like. Incidentally, the English word family carries the same meaning. The word family stands for, the word family is spelled as F-A-M-I-L-Y. F-A-M stands for father and mother. I-L-Y stands for I love you. May I request you to stand up. Turn to your left, turn to your right.
You should stand up.
Treat him as a brother or a sister. Give him a bow or would like to give him a hug and say, brother, father, I love you, mother, I love you. And from today onwards, be the ambassador of, be Buddha's ambassador of peace. Be Buddha's minister of peace. Send the word of peace all over the world. I was very impressed by Professor Brian's speech just now. CUNY is actually preparing ambassadors and sending to a time we never see again. That is all contribute to that, towards that. I'm very happy that we are gathered here today. I think from all corners of America. And this is a very rare occasion. I always treat this as something that we might have been together before. We could have been listening to a Buddha together. Could be 2,000 years ago. It could be something like some time ago we might be graduating from the same, could be CUNY University, I'll say, 2,000 years ago. Then you pass, you move your way, I move my way, then today, wow, we meet together again. What a coincidence. What a beautiful day. For that, I hope that from today onwards we keep on improving ourselves. We can actually look towards a better tomorrow if we are committed. If we are committed. Now, can you please just close your eyes for a while? Sit up straight. Don't think of anything else, but concentrate on breathing for a short while. You know you're breathing. The moment you concentrate on breathing, you do not allow any other things to disturb you. It may show me difficult, but if you try that for some time, you will be able to do it. Then try to switch that concentration into what do you mean by a better tomorrow? What do you mean by a better tomorrow? What do I want my tomorrow to be like? Think about that. Contemplate on that. And also think about the present moment. Yesterday is over. Tomorrow is unpredictable. Now is the moment. Yesterday is gone and gone forever. Nobody can ever go back to yesterday and alter anything at all. And nobody can predict what will happen tomorrow. In Buddhism, we say, now you consist of all conditions. All conditions. If you are prepared to put in new good quality conditions to yourself today, your tomorrow will be better. If you add in some bad quality conditions, your tomorrow will be different. So whether you want to be have a better tomorrow, depends on whether you are willing to add in some good quality conditions to yourself. You've got to take some effort to do it. Now also contemplate about now. Are you satisfied with your life? Think about it. Are you having a very robotic type of life, repeating the same thing every day, again and again, again and again? Oh, 30 years passed. 10 years passed, 5 years ago, I did this and that. Are you still repeating that life very robotically? Think about it. When you're young, think about it. Your parents, for example, force you to go to school, kindergarten, primary school, secondary school, colleges, universities, get your PhD, etc. Then you say, aha, I've completed my education. I can fly. But before you can start flapping your wing, you're caught by the job market. So what? Beautiful life. You earn a lot of money. Whatever you want, you can buy. Whatever you want, you can do it. So what? Very soon, you see Dr. Rich, Madam Beautiful, Mr. Handsome, they all moving towards the same destination, retirement, old age, and waiting to die. Think of it. Is your life already computerized? When you're young, you're pushed into education, forced into it, you have no choice. Then when you finish the second stage of education, you are forced into another stage of life where you sell the knowledge you gain from the first stage for what we call money. The first stage, you spend your youth, valuable time in gain of knowledge. The second stage, you spend your knowledge in exchange of money, 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 money. Oh, how intoxicating is money. How intoxicating indeed. You can get almost anything you want. Then, does it carry you far? Yes, but not too far. Very soon you have to face the fact that you have to retire. You enter the third stage of life. The final stage of life. So what? The destiny of every man is the same. You move slowly towards the graveyard. Don't get frustrated. In Buddhism we say, birth is not the absolute beginning and death is not the absolute end. Birth is only the continuation of death and death is only the metabolism of birth, of death. Moving towards tomorrow, towards a better tomorrow, towards a better tomorrow, towards a better tomorrow. Now is important. Depend on now. The moment you say now, now it's over. No more already. Now is important. Whatever you need to do, do now. Don't delay it. There's a beautiful in this word. Now is all called, now, the word now is all, also called the present. The present is a gift. Make use of the gift. Starting from now, make sure you know your own better tomorrow. Yes, let us see, what is it, a better tomorrow? Think of it. Does a better tomorrow come automatically to you? No, does it not? When you look for something, when you plan for something, when you plan for something and eventually get it, you say success. You plan for something and then you get it, you call success. But success is always the first step. When you want to look for the plan, when you plan for a better tomorrow, you always make sure you use a telescope to look far. Use a telescope to look far. Get the destination correct. What type of destination you want to go to? Then use a microscope to look in detail. How do you plan ahead for it? And when you plan, you've got no choice but to plan step by step. It's something like you're driving at night, in a dark night. The car, the spotlight of the car can go at the most, say 40, 50 meters. As long as you stick to that 40, 50 meters, the road will unfurl by itself. So whatever you plan, not only for a better tomorrow, whatever you plan, there are three very, very important things we must bear in mind. Number one, have you got the correct method? Have you got the correct method? Have you got the correct method? The correct method is very, very important. If the correct method is wrong, you can never reach anywhere. Make sure the correct method is there. Okay, you have got the correct method right. Then make sure you have a very strong, unwavering determination. I want to reach that target. No matter how many times I fall. There may be a big storm, let it come. Big storms, they only blow up the weaker ones and give me, the one with strong perseverance, a better ground to play on. So the second quality of you have got to have a very strong, unwavering determination that you want to reach a target of yours. You want to create a better tomorrow, irrespective of what. Then the third condition, you have no choice. It's not your choice, it's a choice of nature. You must have enough of time to do it. You must have enough time to do it. Buddha always tell us, try your best to see and understand the true nature of things. The true nature of things has no need to ask your opinion. The true nature of things treats everybody the same. It gives you 24 hours, give your father 24 hours, give your daughter 24 hours, gives everybody 24 hours. Nobody say, I got 26 hours. No. I remember I read somewhere, somebody was pointing a finger to him, you're a genius. You're a genius. You know how he answered? What do you mean by I'm a genius? I've been working for 18 hours every day for 18 years. Then you call me a genius. No, you work for it. All your achievements, they are accumulated drop by drop. If you want a better tomorrow, you've got to make sure you collect drop by drop. If, again, I want to make sure here there are so many people. If there are 100 people here, there are 100 different identities. Nobody has the same thinking. Nobody has the same ideal tomorrow. If you're a student, then you behave like a student, start from a student. For example, if I were to ask you, what is the most important thing in the world? I think everybody will give a different answer. Buddha said, don't answer question. Buddha said, observe who asked that question first. If he's a very, very poor fellow, tell him money is most important. He's happy. If he's a very rich person, don't tell him money. Tell him health is most important. I have health, I have money. Tell him happiness is most important. So today I want to spread that happiness to you also. Will you please stand up again? I request you. Take a deep breath and say, again, you are invigorating every cell in your body. If you try to do that often, you can never be sick. Sit down, please. Thank you. Try to repeat that. Don't believe me. Don't believe me. Go home, snap a photograph of yours, slip in an envelope, keep it somewhere. Every day, 6 months' time, you take out that photograph and compare yourself. You'll be a different kind of person. And also from today onwards, remember you are an ambassador of peace. From today onwards, when you meet people, say, what do you want? What do you want? Don't do that. Okay? Make sure you meet people as an angel, not as a demon. From today onwards. And from where? Start from yourself first. A successful person, there are a few conditions, if you call it a successful. Condition number one, you must be happy 24 hours of the day. If you are not, you are not successful. You may be very rich, you are not successful. If you are very sad. Condition number one, you have 24 hours, you must be happy. Number two, you must be healthy. What a nice day. If you sleep in the hospital 23 hours, 24, then how can you be a successful person? The third condition, wherever you go, you are welcome. Ha, you are here, happy to see you. And not say, this person here again, what should we do? Think about that. You think about that. Okay? So make sure, if you want to have a better tomorrow, plan from now. First. Start from the family. Start from yourself, then the family. Go home, pat your wife a little while and say, hey, you've done very well. Ha ha. Pat your husband, say, hey, you've done very well. Thank you. Buddha does not prevent anybody from getting married. No. Buddha wanted us to treat your husband or your wife as the best friend in the world. There's a Pali word for it, if I don't forget. The Pali word is paramasaka. Paramasaka, P-A-R-A-M-A-S-A-K-H-A. Paramasaka means best friend, the best and most sincere friend. Buddha said, the husband is the wife's paramasaka. The wife is the husband's paramasaka. So starting from the house first. And in the house, with a wife, then with the children, make sure. The true nature of things is this. You educate the children to help other people without any discrimination. Whenever possible, you are the first one to benefit from him when he grows up. If you tell him, don't give anybody, you use it, don't give anybody. You teach him the selfish, he will soon operate on you. There was a certain country, certain story, that is not mentioned the country. There was an interesting custom. When people grow old, they say, old people, what for? They are a nuisance to society. So they normally put the old people, the father, the mother, etc., when they're old, they put them in the basket and carry them up to the mountain and leave them there to feed the tigers and lions. Come back. One day, one family, the father was about to take the grandfather to the mountain. The son said, Father, I come with you. He said, no, you don't come. No, I want to come. No, you don't come. No, I want to come. So three persons, the father in a basket, the grandfather in a basket, the father carried a grandfather, the little son, 8 years old, followed him. As soon as the father left the grandfather on the spot, you know, for a meal of lions and tigers, the father helped the grandfather to come out, then leave. The son said, "No, father, don't leave." "What?" "Father, take the basket." "Why?" "No, no use. Take the basket." "Why?" "No, take. Father, I want the basket." "Why?" "Next time when you're old, I can use the basket to carry you and put here." So make sure you don't create that basket. You don't create that basket. So starting from yourself first, make sure you have, in Buddhism, starting from yourself, 不正其身何以正人? You got to make sure you elevate yourself to a valuable standard to be of service to other people first. If you don't elevate yourself, how can you elevate other people? And in Buddhism, we stress on just three things, how to elevate yourself if you want to have better tomorrow. The first one is called sila, precepts. Precepts, to put it in short, is do what is necessary, do what you need to do. What you should do it sincerely and do it well. What you should not do, you should never do at all. Even though the sun is off, the moon is off, the light's all off, it's in complete darkness, you still don't do it. That is why in English we say character. Character is what you do in the dark. Character is what you do in the dark. That's number one. Cultivate that. Corruption. What do you mean corruption? What you need to do, you don't do, is corruption. What you should not do, you do, is corruption. Number two is think. Samadhi. Samadhi. Whenever you face any situation, make sure you keep very calm first. Never say, "Oh, I like it," or "I don't like it." The moment you say, "I like it," "I don't like it," you are more or less already locked up by your subjective opinion. You're already bound up in the subjective opinion. When you tie up yourself in the subjective opinion, the sun will never reach you. In other words, wisdom will never reach you. So when you face situation, any situation, keep calm. Don't say, "Oh, this is stupid." "Oh, I like it." Don't say that first. Observe the true nature of things first. If you stick to your subjective opinion, you will never see the true nature of things. You will never be able to solve problems. Number three, wisdom. Wisdom. Yes. For anybody, very rich, very healthy, still, if you ask you what is the most important thing in the world, tell him wisdom. With wisdom, you have everything. And wisdom, there are stages of wisdom. There are many stages. You've got to cultivate stage by stage. Certain wisdom, for example, what about we're going to rob the bank tonight? You need some wisdom. That type of wisdom, we in Chinese, we say 聪明, huh? We don't call it wisdom at all. It's just ordinary cleverness. Actually, when you talk about wisdom, it's only for good things and not for bad things, when you talk about wisdom. Then in Buddhism, Buddha elevates stage by stage. From wisdom, we elevate into another word called panya. Panya is a state deeper than wisdom. Then from panya is purified, completely purified. When we say wisdom completely purified, we call bodhi. B-O-D-H-I, bodhi. Bodhi means wisdom completely purified. When you have the wisdom completely purified, like the Buddha will see and understand the true nature of things. Buddha doesn't argue with anybody at all because he sees the true nature of things. When you scold Buddha, Buddha just smile. Buddha knew there's no point arguing with you. When Buddha wants to talk to somebody, discuss something with you, he knows, he makes sure that this person is qualified to discuss with you. Take for example, if one day you meet Buddha and say, Buddha, Buddha, can I ask you one question? Buddha, my wife has done something wrong. What should I do? Buddha will tell you, you say your wife has done something wrong. Are you saying subjectively or objectively? Beautiful question, isn't it? You think she's wrong, but people may say, wow, she has done very well. Make sure you say she is wrong, whether it's subjective or objective. Okay, very objective. Yes, she's wrong, she's wrong, she's wrong. Then Buddha tell you, then the next conditions, if you want to tell your wife, make sure your wife benefits from what you say. If you tell your wife and your wife doesn't benefit from what you say and quarrel with you, what for you tell her? Agree? Think about it. When you want to tell your wife, make sure she benefit from what you say. And if you want her to benefit from what you say, make sure you create a situation where the wife is in a good mood, happy mood. Then when you tell her also, tell her in a nice, cordial manner, sincerely, cordially, then and only she accepts, she changes. Buddhism is a wisdom, is a religion of wisdom. Here, I would like to introduce somebody to you. There is a book I want you to read about Buddhism. A simple book, very simple book called What the Buddha Taught. Mr. Lee, are you here? Yeah, Mr. Lee, can you stand up for a while? Mr. Lee here, you can get a book from email, telephone you or what? Okay, you can see him. Okay, if Cuny, for example, if Cuny wants it, he will send you. How many can you send him? You mentioned the amount he will send you. Okay, there is a very, remember, when you read books also, learn from the Buddhists. You don't simply read books at random. You go to Barnes & Noble, there are thousands and thousands of books. You go to any library, thousands and thousands of books. You waste your time. Always ask somebody you know, you respect, which is the best book you have read? Read that book. Which is the best book you have read? Read that book. You save a lot of time. Think about it. If you want to know Buddhism, read that. What the Buddha taught. It gives you a simple, it's just about that size. You could probably finish within one day. And that is not the, again, when you read books, you learn from a bee when you read books. Remember a bee hopping from flower to flower, collecting pollen, then transforming the pollen into superb honey. You read books the same thing. When you read a thick book, you might feel that, probably there are only a few sentences you like it. Probably a few short paragraphs you want it. Correct? The rest, jot down those. Take a walk. Contemplate all those words. Then very soon, you too can convert the pollen into superb wisdom. You can solve problems that way. So remember, you want a better tomorrow, ask yourself, what situation are you in? Are you a student? Are you a housewife? Are you a doctor? Are you a what? Start from there. Plan ahead. Use a telescope, look far, look ahead. Actually, the world is moving on. Sometimes I use the word crazy speed. If human beings do not change the attitude, it will lead to the human annihilation. The complete human race may be wiped out. Science, yes, science is beautiful. In this world, it's always the same thing. If you say it is very long, if there's no short, how can you say long? If you say heavy, there's no light, how can you say heavy? You are happy. If there's no sadness, where is happiness? Same thing, if science is beautiful with their ugly side. Also, science probably will destroy us one day if we go ahead planning with a crazy mind. At the time today, you can see the world powers not showing off with compassion and love and wisdom, but showing off the might. I have this. You don't listen to me, I will do this. It takes only 3 people in the world. Think about it. Don't believe me. It takes only 3 people in this world to go crazy. The entire world will be in fire tomorrow. 3 people. Think. I'm sure you know who are the 3 people. It does not take more than 3 people to just press that that button, huh? Then you and I will suffer tomorrow. You and I may not have the chance to suffer. You may not have the chance to suffer. So science is good. I only hope that CUNY University and you as the ambassador of peace and ambassador of minister of peace make sure our tomorrow is a better one. So that all the people can live in a family, like a family, like a family, like what the Buddha said. No discrimination of any type. It's a universal citizen. Wherever you go, you are looked after. Wherever you go, people say, ha, ah, Father, I love you, Mother, I love you. And try to make that English words meaningful. Family, F-A-M-I-L-Y, Father and Mother, I love you. Okay? I leave other times for your questioning afterwards. Would that be okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Venerable Ji Xing, for your enlightening discussion on Buddhism. We will now hear from Venerable Meng Quang. Let us give us a warm welcome to Venerable Meng Quang.
Good morning, everybody, and Venerables, ladies and gentlemen. And according to Venerable Shinjin Baramaka, that's my dear friend. My name is Meng Quang, and I'm from Boston. I'm staying now in Cambridge, and I got here last night. I'm here. I have a wonderful experience on this special day. I came back from Taiwan at date of September 11th. And that day, when I found out in the airport, it seems a little bit quiet. I choose that day not particularly because I'm going to attend this forum, and I was thinking that if I have 2 days rest and preparation, and it will be better for me. I didn't choose that day particularly. But at that day, on the plane, a thinking came to me. One thing occurred in my mind. I remember 6 years ago when I was in an intensive 1-year course of meditation training in our headquarter temple, which is Fo Guang Shan in northern part of Taiwan. For 3 days after 9/11, I was wrapped up by a very deep sorrow in my mind. And that's the feeling I felt. And also I felt very strong hatred, anger, and ignorance created by human beings. And that thing was occurred in my mind after 6 years at the day of 9/11. And this is the first thing I would like to share with you. And I'm standing here just to sharing some ideas of meditation. I'm not the expert of meditation, because people sometimes they will ask, how many years of experience of you taking meditation? I'm not here to say how beautiful or how useful for meditation. I'm here to just express some ideas of meditation after some practicing. We all know that the Buddha, the first thing the Buddha recognized was suffering. Because in this world, we have to experience, first thing is our birth, and our sickness, our old age, and of course, our death. And during our lifespan, we happen to meet some things we don't want to. And that we call sufferings. And also, sometimes we don't feel happy when we meet people we don't like to, or we are forced to separate from our beloved ones. So that all kinds of suffering, the Buddha said, there's one way to eliminate all these kinds of sufferings. Of course, meditation is one of the many ways. When we say eliminate or reduce negativity in our life, one way leads us to think about to train our mind. Because our mind can create everything. In Dhammapada, the Buddha teaches, mind leads our action. If we think good, then we can act good. So most of the people, maybe you have written so many books, and the books always teach us, if you think good and think positive, and then you can have a good effect in your life. And meditation has that kind of effect in our life. And that's why I'm saying that meditation is a way for our inner peace. Okay, well, before I go by, I would like to share my experience. I think most of you know the word meditation. It's the Sanskrit word we call dana. And the Chinese translation is Qian, and in Japanese we say Zen. No matter what language we use, it all comes to one meaning. Meditation is a kind of observing, is a kind of mindfulness, and is a kind of self-awareness. Only by through the self-awareness that we know ourselves. That's what we call the reality of ourselves. And nowadays, we all wrap around by much materials. Like before, we have only radio. But when the new age comes, and then we have computer, and then we have cell phone, and now we have iPod, and of course we have iPhone. All kinds of these things. You can see so many young people, when they have cell phone, they ask for iPod. When they have iPod, they need some improved things because they feel secure or they feel fashionable to have all those things. But meditation has the other way to teach us how to think in word, how to think backward. We don't need so many things in our daily life. So meditation provides very simple and direct way. If you know a very simple, we call it Gong'an. Gong'an is word in Chinese Qian, is a dialogue practiced by practitioners to raise their doubts of their thinking. That's what we call Gong'an. The Gong'an, usually the most famous one, is that we ask, what's the true meaning of the Bodhidharma coming from the West? That's most popular one, most famous Gong'an, when we practice Gong'an. And usually, people have different answers about that question. And in my meditation class, usually I will have this kind of question, and we have a little discussion. And one day, when I said, let's play around with this question, and I introduced Bodhidharma and his story and his life, and then we have all the answers from the question. What's the true meaning of the Bodhidharma coming from the West? In Chinese, it's 何为祖师西来意? Of course, we have so many questions. And one of the students came up a very interesting one. He said, I think the true meaning of the Bodhidharma coming from the West is to teach me how to get rid of stress. And I think this is very good, because when we think mindfulness, or when we think meditation, we think of ourselves. We think of our needs purely for ourselves, not the materials outside of us. That's we think really, who am I and how am I live and what do I do? All kinds of these questions, when we practice meditation, we can ask ourselves about all these. And that's the meditation for. And to me, meditation is not only sitting. When we sit, of course, we close our eyes and we take our breathing in and out, in and out. And sometimes by more practicing, we can sit maybe 1 hour or 2 hours. But what about after the sitting meditation? If we cannot succeed to think ourselves, and then there's no use of the meditation practicing. So when I was in our monastery, our master, Verbal Xingyun, he always mentioned to us, if we need the real meaning and we are searching for the real meaning of meditation, is that the meditation, or in other words, mindfulness or self-awareness, is in our daily life, not only for the sitting period. And that's the first thing I learned from meditation. And the second thing I learned from meditation is a very direct way. You don't need anything, you need just a simple action. Direct way is that you just do one thing. You just take your breathing. And that's very simple and direct. In 8th century, in Tang Dynasty, we have a very famous poet. His name is Bai Zhiyi. And one day, he raised a question to a very famous Zen master because he always lived on the top of the tree. And he made a tree house on the tree. And usually people entitle him Master Bird Nest because he likes to enjoy to live with the birds, I guess. And he always lived up on the tree. And the very famous poet raised a question to him. Say, ask him, tell me, what's the core meaning of Buddhism? And the master said, it's very simple. Refrain to do evil, good to do good, and cultivate yourself. After receiving this answer, apparently the poet was not satisfied with this kind of answer. And he said, what kind of answer is this? Only even a 3-year-old child can understand it. And the Zen master answered, yes, even a 3-year-old kid can understand, but it is hard for 80-year-old person practice that. When I first read this kind of, we call the practicing gongan, I couldn't understand that. What do it mean, cultivate ourselves? On the outside world, when we say cultivate ourselves, maybe we build up our world by fame, by money, by everything we can get or we can search. But what about cultivate ourselves inside? I think that Master Burnest said, cultivate yourself, which means you have to be aware of yourself. As a child, we always taught by our parents and our teachers. Ethically, we do something good, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with that. But after we growing up, except for doing good or learn to be good, there is something inside us, something we should look very clearly about ourselves, something that except for the fame, except for money, except for every kind of materials outside of us, something that is very pure heart, very pure mind inside of us. That's what we call the Buddha nature. So what does the true meaning of cultivate ourselves? By meditation, because meditation can provide us very simple and direct way to learn how to teach us self-awareness, observing us. And that's the first things I learned from meditation. Usually when we end up a class, a meditation class, we'll have something to discuss in our group. And one day we discuss what effect or what does meditation work on us. And one of the students said, oh, recently I sleep very less. I sleep very late because I have much stress and I cannot concentrate. But when I came in to the class, I can sleep very well. I said, well, that's good. That's good effect of meditation. And I remember when I was in meditation school for 1 year, one person beside me, she just slept for 6 months. Every time when we sit on the chair and she falls asleep. For 6 months. And at the first time I just said, what? You can sleep during your meditation period? We are supposed, to concentrate, to observe ourselves. But how could you sleep all over for 6 months? And I said to her, you must waste a lot of time. But after that answer, I recognized that sleeping is also a good effect when you learn meditation. Because we have, in our daily life, we have a lot of distress. And we have a lot of stress in our work and in our relationship with everybody. So that's a good effect of meditation. So in the word of meditate, it means contemplate. I think everybody knows. But how to contemplate? Sleep well is one way of good contemplation, because you concentrate on sleeping. So that's why the meditation for. When we do something, we do something attentionally and with all our heart. And that's the meaning of meditation. To me, meditation teach me another thing, is how to be present. When I say how to be present, that means we cherish the right moment we are holding. The right moment, usually we think ahead. I have a character of thinking ahead because I have to plan, I have a good schedule for tomorrow, otherwise I don't feel secure. But after meditation, we say, you have to live at the present moment. The present moment, which means you using your life to receive the beauty. And that's the present moment. To think about ourselves, most of us here, I believe we have a plan for our future. We set up so many steps. We do the first step, and then we do the second, and do the third. That's our plan. Before, I plan everything. In 10 years, I wish I could do this. In 1 week, I wish I could finish all kinds of things at hand. And that's what we plan. But usually, when we plan ahead, we forgot something. We forgot we have to cherish the present moment. And meditation provides a chance for me to feel the present moment at hand. That's why we say breathing, because breathing is the present things you have done when you take meditation, when you practice meditation. When I first day, when I was in the meditation class, I asked teacher, why you always mention breathing and pay attention to breathing? What kind of that? Is there any kind of ways or any kind of method I can use for meditation, like creating an object in my mind like the other ways. And my teacher said, when you meditate, you just drop off everything on your mind, on your heart, and you just being simple and being enjoy the present moment you have. And everyone at the same time do the same thing, which is breathing. So breathing is one way of enjoying the present moment. Just like a verbal Xinjing just said, you feel good, you feel happy. So I think that's a good note about to feel the present moment we have. Because we can see the beauty, we can enjoy the beauty of present moment. So the Chan master, they observe things differently. When they see flowers, they can observe the fragrance from the flower. When they see people walking, they can observe the speed of their walking. They can observe the mind of their walking. So that's why meditation teaches to enjoy or to feel how to be present. And that's the second thing I learned from meditation. I have a friend in Boston who is a homeless people. When he came to our temple, he said, I'd like to learn the meditation. And he really practiced meditation when she's begging money from the street. I said, how do you use your meditation when you're begging money from the people? Oh, he said, that's very simple. One day I found out it's more than the sitting meditation I should learn. I should meditate when I look at the money people gave me. I said, how do you do that? Oh, he said, I choose a very noisy street and I stand there. Okay, and then I close my eyes and I listen. I said, how do you listen? He said, on the first day, people gave him money, just dropped the coins, and he listened to the sound of the dropping coins. And usually, he will count how many times of the dropping coins. And gradually, on the second day, he said, no, I cannot be so attached by the money people contribute to me. So he said, I am going to practice non-attachment. And he found out people gave me more money, the money bill, not the coins, not the changes. And the third time, he said, no, I still have to practice non-attachment to the bill money, the money bill people gave him. And by this kind of practicing, he found out he can learn more from the first day to the third day. And I said, how much do you earn averagely? He said, oh, maybe $37 a day. I say it's a good occupation. Maybe we should do some alms begging there. And that's one way of his practicing of meditation. Even, I mean, a homeless people, he can do his own meditation. You see, those homeless people, they slept on streets And I asked them, you have a certain place to sleep? Or they say, oh yes. They usually they have a certain place to sleep on, sleep overnight. And I said, and you don't bother by the noises from the street? He said, we used to it. I said, no, that's a kind of meditation. You don't disturb by the odd noises around you. So I'm saying that meditation is something actually we can use in our daily life. Even the homeless people, they still, even though they don't know that's meditation, that's a way of meditation, but actually they are doing it. Once we got used to it, and it becomes part of us. So that's what I learned from meditation. And the third one I learned from meditation is that I learned more compassion and more patience and more consideration for others. One of my friends, her family, two members of her family was murdered by a person, by a madman. And after 5 years, she discovered what is the real meaning of forgiveness. She said to me, before she still have a lot of anger on the madman, and they all wish him to die in the jail. But after 5 years, he said, I really took refuge to Chan, to meditation. And after 5 years, she found out if she can switch the role from for people, and she become more compassionate, and she learned faith, and she learned compassion. That's what the meditation teaches. When we first learn meditation, we have to be patient to ourselves. For the beginners, I think if one of you or some of you taking meditation class, the first you will feel uncomfortable feelings. When you sit, maybe you cannot cross your leg. And most of our beginners, meditation practitioners, they all feel discomfort from their body. Sometimes they feel, oh, it's itchy. And sometimes they fell asleep. And sometimes they don't feel good at the beginning of meditation, and that needs patience. That's what I said. When we learn more about meditation, we learn more about patience. First, patient to yourself, and then you have more patience to others. And then you have more patience toward your life. You have more patience toward the discomfort, dissatisfaction, anger occurred around you. So that's one thing I learned from meditation. And also, compassion. Compassion is the only thing we human beings have. When we say compassion, that means we considerate ourselves at the same time others. And that's compassionate. We say bodhisattva, or the people who strive for Buddhahood. We all learn how to be compassionate, how to be kind, and how to be considerate of others. And that's the answer, and that you can get from meditation. And meditation also doesn't apply only for sitting. According to our teaching, meditation can be applied in our daily life. No matter we are walking and we have walking meditation, and when we do the driving, we have driving meditation. No matter what action we are doing, we just do at the present moment. We have to do it, and we don't think others. We don't have the second thought, and that's contemplation. And that's what I learned from meditation. And people, when they practice meditation, of course, they have different reasons. Some of them, maybe they are curious about meditation, and some of them, maybe they said, oh, I don't feel satisfied with my work or my job, and I want to find a new way. And people, they said, I can calm down my mind, and I have so many flying thoughts in my mind. That's why I want to calm down. And meditation can help with us, can help us to attain a calm mind and also create more happiness to us. And that's what I learned from meditation. Actually, meditation is just like a part of ourselves. Since we learned that Buddha taught us, we all have the same Buddha nature. And of course, we all have the kind of potential to be attained and to gain Buddhahood, because we are all future Buddhas. And future Buddhas will do the same thing, just enlighten ourselves. That's what we are taking meditation for. So here, let me introduce some phrases from Thich Nhat Hanh, and before I end up, let's close gently our eyes, and then we contemplate for 1 minute. While we doing the meditation, please repeat after me in your mind. Sitting here is like sitting under a Bodhi tree. My body is mindfulness itself. Free from all distraction. Now please open your eyes. And thank you again for letting me sharing some ideas of meditation here. Thank you all.